Good morning. Welcome to the House Water Committee meeting Tuesday, March 25th. For informational purposes, before we begin here, you will note, some of you have noted, that there are a number of bills listed as public hearings. Those of you who are familiar around the building would be aware that all of those, or almost all of those bills, with the exception of House Bill 2895, are merely being tapped in today. We have a deadline by which bills have to have that done. I think the deadline is April 11th. I realize we're a few days ahead of April 11th, but this is just a housekeeping bill so that we don't get them all piled up on the at the last moment. With that, we will at this point open a public hearing on House Bill 2473. I beg your pardon. We will open a work session on House Bill 2473. Mr. Tess.
Representative Henson, 2473. We had talked about taking that off the agenda. Okay. 2473 deals with that the State Department of Fish and Game would use up to 25% of their trout or hatchery budget to buy trout from private hatcheries.
Okay. Yeah, the chair is trying to work with Representative Butler a little bit on this bill. We won't proceed any further with it, except to inquire if there's anyone that has come here to perhaps give us any testimony that they might have on House Bill 2473. I realize that in work session, testimony is invited testimony, but we extend that invitation to anyone who might have that in mind. Hearing none or seeing none, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2473 and open a work session on House Bill 2227. And as the chair in one of the other committees that I sit on advised the sponsors of a bill the other day, that three times and you're out. Hoping we have this right on this occasion. Mr. Tech.
Yes, House Bill 2227 allows water utilities that serve fewer than 500 customers to elect to be subject to financial regulation by Public Utility Commission. Provides the commission may allow rates for water utility that include costs specified specific capital investments, allows commission to impose civil penalty not more than $500 against person who violates statute, rule, or order of commission related to water utilities, allows water utility to apply for commission order defining exclusive service territories, specifies procedures, applications, and commission decisions or handling applications. And we have -1 amendments to the bill. And probably we have the representative of the PUC to discuss those amendments with you. They relate to several things. It's best they describe them rather than me.
Okay, Lee.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you open the public hearing before we left?
No.
It's a work session.
Work session.
Okay. Thanks.
We just want him to clarify the -1, I believe.
Yeah.
-1.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, Commissioner with the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I have Rebecca Heffler here with me. who runs our water programs. We went through this in some detail a couple of weeks ago, and we've sort of gone through a couple of cycles waiting for the amendments to appear. So I apologize for that. The amendments really do just two things. One is they clarify that the fining authority, which is fairly small, $500 under the bill, if there is a fine, the money goes back to benefit the ratepayers in the utility from which it's paid, the intent to make the system work and improve it and make sure they get their services. So that was one to be clear. The second thing was that it authorizes the PUC to, when it deems there's a need for an emergency repair, such as water goes out on the weekend, can't get a hold of the owner, to go in and fix that repair so that the ratepayers in that utility can get the water to keep going on, and then recover that money from the owner. So that's the two things that it does. Again, I apologize for the delay in getting the amendments back from the Legislative Council, but that just happens sometimes. Hopefully it suits your will this morning.
Okay, are there any questions of the representative?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say we forgive you.
It wasn't me who didn't get the amendments done.
Good boy, passing the mic. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2227.
Representative Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2227. Is there any objection? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2227 to
the floor.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2227 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Chocolate.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye. Aye.
Representative
Crum.
Aye.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
I move House Bill 2227 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2227 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We appreciate your patience.
Okay. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2227. And we will postpone the next two pages of bills and advance the calendar here to get to those areas that we will be spending some time on this morning. And the first bill we will hear is, I have a public hearing on 2268. Open the public hearing on 2268. Mr. Tenney.
House Bill 2268 modifies fees collected by the Water Resource Department, specifies how the department may expend monies received from certain fees deposited into Water Resource Department Operating Fund, declares emergency effective on passage. We have one set of amendments, and the ones that are in your packet, we find out are wrong. We're going to be looking at the dash threes, which include everything, and the dash twos, with the addition of a phrase that had to be put in because there was a slight drafting problem from LC. That's been corrected, and I'm sure Mr. Sussman will mention that when he goes through the amendments with you. We also, I understand, have a dash one set that the department's aware of that I don't have a copy of yet that I will be getting because I'm going through the notes now to get them for you. That's the situation with this bill, and from there.
We have a sign-up sheet on it.
Do we have any sign-up sheet on 2268?
Mr. Sussman, please. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. I have some material I wanted to hand out. Thank you.
morning, Adam. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. For the record, Adam Sussman, Water Resources Department. I'm the legislative coordinator. I believe Paul Cleary may be joining me any minute, so...
He is? I believe
he has joined me now.
That means everything.
Impeccably so, it appears.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cleary, Director of the Water Resource Department. Let's see, we're up on our fee bill back in front of you. And we appreciate the opportunity to come back in front of you on this. We've took your advice to heart, met with our stakeholders, revamped several provisions in the bill, and have also proposed, which we'll take up with the Ways and Means Committee, a series of amendments to the actual fees themselves, which would reflect a change in the time horizon. When we developed this bill, we were looking at perhaps not coming back in front of the legislature for another 2 to 3 bienniums. People felt that because of that time horizon, we had too steep of an increase, and they wanted us to shorten that horizon and possibly be back and have conversations on a more regular basis with you. And also in the interim, work with the stakeholders on a fee work group that would deal with various cost containment strategies, regulatory streamlining, and outsourcing as well. The bill has got two main parts. One is, of course, the dealing with our transaction fees and proposed fees for activities that are currently exempt. People have asked us, what are you doing with the money? We've got about 21.5 full-time equivalents that work on water right transactions. 7 of those are supported by fees, and this fee adjustment would allow us to continue those 7 positions. About one-third of the positions that deal with water right transactions are supported by fees. Currently, our water right transfers are handled by about 12 FTEs, all of them currently supported by the general fund. And this bill would allow us to add 2 FTEs to process water transfers and 1 to process in-stream leases and allocations of conserved water. And this is to address the backlog issues associated with those 2 activities. And then finally, we've got a section in the bill that that deals with the start card fee. This, again, is the fee that's submitted whenever someone starts to or proposes to start to drill a new well. Currently at $75, would go to $125, and that would allow us to continue to support the approximately 11 FTEs associated with our well inspection program. We talked some when we first were before you and with the stakeholders as well about what the forecasts are for these 2 funds. The start card fund at the current fee level is forecasted to go to 0 sometime August, September of this calendar year, early in the next biennium. So we definitely have to address the start card fee. The water right operating fund at current levels would zero out as well in early or not in the next biennium, latter part of the next biennium though. So we're trying to avoid both a close down in our well inspection program as well as a potential close down in a significant part of our water right application processing capabilities. So as we propose, both of these would extend out through the 2005-2007 biennium. If we're not successful in developing new systems to contain costs, streamline processes, we will be back in front of you possibly next biennium to discuss, but we'll be back to discuss the outcome of the work of that work group.
Paul, how much have you factored in, or is it appropriate in considering this, the other bill that we passed out of here for you that allows you to contract out some of the water rights application fee or projects.
Right.
Being the general consensus was that most of that would be with large water right applications, something like Three Mile Farm or Inland.
Right.
Is it, you know? And those that take a considerable amount of time.
Right.
In looking at your, in projecting out, have you tried to project, you know, what kind of savings there might be there so that you would maybe be able to expedite these other backlog of issues that you have?
Right. Chair Jensen, you're talking about the receipts authority legislation, and as you noted, that would be associated with probably large projects, and we've not had any experience with that here in Oregon, so it's hard for us to forecast how many of these applications that are either in the queue or may be coming in would actually choose that approach. But we would assume that we'd be primarily dealing with industrial applications, with large-scale ag operations such as Three Mile Farm, possibly, and those are pretty unique in the state, possibly irrigation districts and municipalities. Not so much, we don't anticipate individual operators to use that. And so what that allows us to do would be to move those people into a different line, if you will. But we can't use, if I remember right, that bill limits us in terms of the receipts authority to only the costs associated with that application. So we can't generate any revenue from that to move into this other process.
By the same token, you don't have any loss of revenue for that.
Right. We may move some of them out, right? Yeah. Right. Because like we've indicated earlier, right now, our average cost for, say, a water right application is somewhere around $2,200. The fee is averaging around $700. So obviously, we wouldn't be absorbing any loss associated with those. You're correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Flurry. Before we get too far ahead, early, as you first started, you said approximately 21.5 FTE are working on water right transactions.
Right.
And then, because I don't have it here, what is the full-time FTE Water Resources Department figure?
We've got in the governor's balance budget about 144.
In the whole department?
In the whole department, right. Right.
Sorry.
So in terms of the discussion that we had with stakeholders, again, first off, people brought up the fact that because we hadn't come in for 6 years, we were looking at a pretty dramatic increase. They asked us to consider shorten that planning horizon, which in turn would basically cut the fee increase about in half. This revised proposal would get us back to the cost recovery that the legislature, in essence, adopted in 1997 when they adopted our last fee adjustment, and we were at about 37% of the cost were paid by fees and the rest absorbed by the general fund. We did look at how much it might cost someone if the private sector were processing these. We don't have that experience here in Oregon, but we checked in Washington where they do allow consultants to process the permits, and the average cost of a groundwater permit up in Washington State would be about $6,500, where we're processing at about $2,200. You know, it seems like we're adding we're providing a pretty good value for the money in terms of the processing these permits. So we propose to revise the fees. Again, that's a discussion in front of Ways and Means and not this committee, but the rationale for it was to reduce the planning horizon. We also propose an amendment that would require the department to sponsor a fee work group, as I indicated earlier. There are some questions about whether we're creating disincentives to certain activities, and the two that particularly come to mind are in-stream leases, which currently we process at no cost to the applicant, And what we call alternate reservoirs or small ponds. These are reservoirs with dams of 9.2 acre feet or less, or a 10-foot high dam or less. It can store quite a bit more. We've had ones that are, you know, 120 acre feet or so, which, you know, is like a 40 acre parcel covered with 3 feet of water. That have fallen under our alternate pond process. And right now, there's no base minimum for that. We will issue pond permits for less than a dollar. And our proposal had been to increase that to, what was it, Adam, $250 originally? Our proposal had gone up, yeah, to $200. And with the revision in planning horizon, that minimum would be back down in the $100 range. Same thing with the in-stream leases. But that's a you know, that's a legitimate discussion, I think, with for the legislature to have. Do they want us to have some kind of a minimum processing fee, or do we have applications that could be processed at quite a bit less than that? And if you want a minimum, should it be $100, should it be $50, should it be $150? Dedicated funds, stakeholders were wanting to make sure that this money was actually used for what it was being raised for. And right now the start card fee is a dedicated fund. The money's deposited, the interest that's earned stays in that account, and it can only be used for the activities associated with the well inspection program. We have proposed an amendment that would create a dedicated water right operating fund, so all the fees associated with water right applications, transfers, and so forth would be treated the same way as the start card fee. Protest fees, we have proposed raising the protest fee for all activities for water right applications. It would go from $200 to $250. For water right transfers, it would go from $25 to $250. We think that back in 97, the focus was on the application. That's when they adjusted the application from 25 to 200. We just didn't have the transfer issue in front of the legislature. But we propose to set that fee at $250 and monitor whether that fee is a disincentive to frivolous protests, if you will, and then include the results of that in our report back to the legislature. We finally had one item.
Paul, I have a question regarding back to the dedicated funds. I wanted to ask you, when you're looking at setting up this water right operating fund, is the idea that eventually all of the permits would be paid through this fund, separate from general funded positions?
Chair Jensen, Representative Dinkfelder, under this proposed bill at this time, we still would have that mix of general fund positions and fee-based positions, and it would still be about the same as it's been in the past, one-third, two-thirds, if you will. We're not proposing to go to a total enterprise account basis for applications at this time, and I think even down the road, you still have got a pretty solid argument that there ought to be some general fund money in the processing of applications and transfers because of the public interest issues that are dealt with in that process. And it's not solely for the benefit of the applicant. There are public values, public issues that are considered in that and dealt with.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Regarding the start card
right.
fee, what percentage of that would be paid through fees versus general fund? If the fee increase goes through,
Chair Jensen, Representative Dinkfelder, for the well inspection program, those positions are all paid out of the start card fee. That's not our only groundwater activity, obviously, and the well inspection program benefits from general fund funded positions and general fund funded activities in the rest of our groundwater program. But well inspection, the well contractors want to make sure that this was a dedicated fund and used solely for those activities, so it's very well fenced off.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. In
In your previous attachment number two that you had handed out in the first hearing, which talks about water right transfer processing facts, you mentioned average processing is $1,260 per application. And I made a note here, what are the details of the cost? And I had hoped that you could have provided me with that information as to how you arrive at a $1,260 figure.
Chair Jensen, Representative Krupp, the costs associated with processing a transfer are the costs included in our notice. We don't do the advertisement in the newspaper, but we include indications in our weekly notice. The personnel costs associated with reviewing the application, the costs associated with reviewing potential injury, and the costs associated with processing any kind of protest. It's almost all personnel-related cost, with the exception of some minor costs for our notice end of it.
Okay, and can you provide me with those dollar breakdowns?
In terms of how many...
Average
time. What's the average length of time? Yeah, we certainly can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, appreciate that.
I think the final point from the stakeholder discussion was there was some confusion and concern about a proposed revision in our statute involving the term groundwater management areas. Under current law, if there's a groundwater management area designated by the department, we're required to issue permits for all water uses. There can be no more exempt uses in a groundwater management area. Now, this is a tool we have never used. And the Department of Environmental Quality in their statutes has the same term, groundwater management area. Mm-hmm. Their program focuses on water quality related issues, for example, high groundwater levels and nitrate problems in wells. And people were concerned that if DEQ designated a groundwater management area, the Water Resources Department would then become embedded in that, if you will, and have to issue permits for all wells and require a fee. We just wanted to make sure if we were issuing permits for any reason that we could collect fees associated with those permits. We understand that there'll be a proposal just to eliminate this reference to this term in our statutes, and we don't have any problem with that because it's a term that we've never applied via rule. We've got groundwater limited areas, we've got critical groundwater areas, and if this will help eliminate some of that confusion, we're supportive of that amendment. So with that, the bill proposes to increase various transaction fees, proposes new fees for activities that currently don't pay anything, increase in the well construction start card fee. We believe that these fees are critical to the operation of the department and to our ability to support economic development and environmental quality objectives throughout Oregon. We support the bill and the amendments as described above and respectfully request that the committee advance it to Ways and Means for further action.
There are further questions from Water Resources Department.
Okay.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you. Paul, I just want to clarify, since I wasn't part of the work group, and make sure that I'm understanding what you're proposing here. If I'm reading this right, what you're proposing is to increase the fees for the Start Card program.
Right.
And then you're proposing, instead of that schedule that you had put forth in the original public hearing, putting that on hold and during the interim having a work group, or is that during the rest of this session and coming back and asking for this increase? I'm trying to get a sense of the timing here.
Right. Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, what we're proposing is for the fee adjustments to be revised from the original proposal. From, for example, we had originally proposed to increase the application fee from $250 to $500. With a revised time horizon, we would propose to increase that only to $300. And but that discussion, we understand, is supposed to occur in front of the Ways and Means. So we wanted to kind of alert you to this is what we would propose in terms of the actual fee levels in front of the Ways and Means. And we included a table in the materials that shows the current fee, and then over on the far right-hand side, the HB 2268 as originally proposed, and then the one in the middle, the column in the middle, it would be this revised fee proposal that we would carry forward in our discussion of Ways and Means. And so we are proposing to increase star card fees this session and increase water right application and transaction fees, the latter not as much as originally proposed, basically cutting them in half.
Follow?
And a clarification as far as the timing of the work group.
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, the work group would be in the interim, and it would primarily be focusing on our processes, our outsourcing opportunities, and any kind of cost containment strategies. Because, again, we've shortened up the horizon a lot. If we're going to come back in 2 years from now, I think you guys are going to have some real hard questions as to, well, what happened last time and what have you done to try to avoid making this a regular appearance. And we'd like to avoid making it a regular appearance. And if there's any opportunities out there for us to find ways to reduce or contain our costs, work smarter, we're interested in those. Because also the general fund pressure, we know that as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, please.
Thank you. Representative Shoffler.
I know we mandate people to get these permits, and there's probably some question on whether if we mandate the community to get a permit, should we charge them? But there's a long list of why we need a permit.
Right.
And I'm not going to go into those, but I could, but I won't. I think it would be helpful for everybody to say exactly how much the actual permitting process costs rather than just the fee. I mean, you're not recovering 100% anywhere near it. And I think that would be a good idea to have that column here. And to say why it costs that much. I agree with Representative Krupp there.
Right. Chair Jensen, Representative Schalfer, appreciate that. As we indicated, our average for a water right application is somewhere around $2,200. Our average for a transfer is somewhere around $1,200. Varies dramatically. We've got a transfer, potential transfer in front of us that could cost upwards of $100,000 to process. It's a huge reshuffling of water rights within a district. I should have brought over. I've got a single page with four irrigation circles on it that involves movement of seven different water rights within those four irrigation circles, and the real complex things, because we are dealing with property rights. We are dealing with property rights that have different attributes in terms of priority date, rate, and duty. We've got to keep that stuff straight. It's very much much like a title examination, if you will. We got to get it right the first time because we don't have a chance to go back and correct it after we've approved it. So, the costs are significant. We think we add a lot of value though with it as well, and so that's a good point.
There are the questions.
Chair Jensen, would you like I understand there's, amendments to the bill and dash three amendments. And
I assume you either have or want to talk about your dash three amendments.
Okay. I don't know that I've got them in front of me. I think Adam had indicated there's a... Oh, okay. So, Adam, you want to walk through the...
Sure. Okay. Again, Adam Sussman, Water Resources Department, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. The dash three amendments is what I'm going to talk about, and I'll just try to hit the high points because there's a lot of just sort of conforming amendments. But
don't worry about boring us.
Okay, I'll bore you then. On the first page, I'll talk about the amendment where it starts on line three, and it says on page four. That amendment was to address some concerns about raised by our stakeholders about should there be different costs for water right activities that provide a public benefit. Again, getting at the disincentive issue. And what this amendment does is consistent with the current law that allows the director to waive a portion of a water right transfer fee that provides a public benefit, we would include in that allocations of conserved water. So in other words,
public benefit you define as in-stream flows or something of that type?
Yes, Chair Jensen. In this case, there's actually three criteria that are laid out, and one of them is that the Department of Fish and Wildlife determined that it provides a public benefit.
Okay.
And so this was to address, because right now allocations of conserved water, there's no fee for an allocation of conserved water. And this bill would propose a fee of $700 for an allocation of conserved water. This amendment would allow the director to waive a portion of that fee under certain circumstances. The next amendment that I want to talk about, again, on the first page, it starts on page 6, line 10, which is in line 11 of the amendments. This is where we make the amendment to the statute to establish the Water Right Operating Fund, again, a dedicated account separate and distinct from the general fund, and that amendment lays out how that would be. The rest, the amendments that come on page 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and all the way to the bottom of page 7 are simply conforming amendments to change the wording from water right operating account to this water right operating fund. So when we changed the terminology, legislative council simply had to go through some other statutes that had the account language in it. And those are, again, simply conforming amendments. A lot of paper to change a few words. On the bottom of page 7, starting on line 30, which is the section 11, this is where, as Representative Dingfelder was asking about, this is the sort of work group concept that we worked on with the stakeholders, again, to, after we get these fee increases, to go back and huddle and work with our stakeholders to talk about, you know, cost recovery activities, how are these new fees holding up to inflation, and what can we do to create financial incentives to promote public interest activities, and requires the department to come back to the next legislature to provide a report on that work group activity. Section 12, I'm on the last page of the amendments, the dash 3 amendments on line 13, simply repeals the language regarding the work group once we complete that task. And finally, the last amendment, starting on line 17 of page 8, is complicated to read, but very simple in concept. And what this is again addressing one of the concerns that was raised by a number of the stakeholders, that they're in the process of negotiating contracts for work, and if these fees were to come effective immediately, that could be a real problem in certain circumstances. So what this amendment does is says that the fees for the water right transactions and other transactions will be effective October 1 of 2003, but the start card fees, which are in Section 3 of the bill, would be effective upon passage.
And the reason for that is the start card fees are going to be gone before we get to
October.
October.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Small minor detail. Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Sign up sheet. I think Gary is signed up somewhere along the line in here, so let me start out with Mr. Schmidt. And,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. We produced the Dash 1 amendments. You also find a discussion on page 4 of the department's testimony that includes the discussion groundwater management areas. The simple essence of this bill is to remove subsection 4 of the existing statutory language, and that's covering the issue of groundwater management areas. It was really confusing when I went back and started to look to see what these areas were, because I was confused why the department was asking for authority to require a fee. And then I realized that that was part of an omnibus DEQ bill in 1989, and that's where that term water management area comes from, is from the Senate bill, or House Bill 3515. The department AG evidently feels that there is some different type of definition for a water management area, not... In other words, they don't have to comply with DEQ's definition. So with the policy being as it is, that we're very unsure of what that term means, for sake of clarification, we ask that that subsection be removed. The department has no problems with it. DEQ has no problems with it. I did speak with the director yesterday in their budget hearing, and their water quality administrator. They have used this twice in the past, once, I believe, in Malheur County, and another, I believe, in Umatilla. And they're currently using that designation, or at least a discussion of that designation, in the Coburg area. And with that, I take questions if any members of the committee have any questions.
Probably the wrong person to ask. So I might be curious to know, if they're not going to use that term, what they are going to use.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, My, I'll let Paul answer that from his standpoint, but my feeling was is that since I was unsure what the term meant, and since the department was not really clear of what the legislative intent was, then we're better off just removing it. They have a number of tools. They've got critical groundwater area designations. They've got limited groundwater designations. They have withdrawal issues where they can actually withdraw exempt uses. They have special area standards where they can go in and issue special area well construction standards. In other words, if there's a toxic area or a high nitrate level, they can require certain well constructions to exclude those possibilities. So they have a number of tools in their tool bag, and I think that's probably why that they didn't have any heartburn about removing that section. Paul?
Chair Jensen, Paul Clary, Director of the Water Resource Department. Jerry's right. We've got a number of tools, and what we wanted to do was eliminate the confusion that the action by DEQ could result in people not being able to get exempt use wells and us being required to issue permits at no fee. And we weren't comfortable with that approach. That's why we had our AG conclude that, no, that couldn't dictate it. But we don't think that this will weaken the groundwater management program at all, and it will clarify things.
But thank you. And that was kind of for the record, because I thought that's where we were at with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else that would like to take their shot at Water Resource Department this morning? No, you missed it, Paul. You can't do it now. At this point, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2268. The chair would entertain. The chair would make a motion that we move House Bill or. The Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2268.
Do we have to open up a work session?
We do. Close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2268.
I move the Dash 3 amendments be adopted.
We're doing the Dash 1 first.
Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't do the Dash 1 or the Dash. Are we doing the Dash 2s as well?
No.
Just the Dash 1 and 3?
Dash 3 and Dash 2 are the same.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2268 be adopted by the committee.
Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, what are we doing?
The Dash 1 amendments, sir.
Okay.
Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2268.
Representative Dingfelder moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2268.
Be adopted.
Be adopted. And, you know, with this, before we take a motion on moving the bill, the chair would be most comfortable with the motion that had no recommendation on the fees, and that this be a decision to be reached by the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2268 with the dash one and dash three amendments be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with no recommendation from this committee.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 2268 to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended, 2268 as amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I not wanted to necessarily stall the process, and I think my vote won't do that, but I'm going to vote no, and I want on the record the reason why I'm voting no, and it's something that Paul made reference to, and some of this is outside of their scope at this point in time, simply because the convoluted, complicated mess we have in the state of Oregon called water law. But you know, Paul made reference to economic development, and in conversations with businesses trying to locate in the state and businesses who are not going to locate in the state, one of the compelling reasons that they choose not to come here is that our regulatory process in total is so convoluted and takes so long to get through that it ultimately discourages them and invites them to go to another state to locate their business. Now, admittedly, water law isn't the whole of that discussion, but you know, in all the times that we have talked about the permitting process and giving more people to work the process, I have yet to see a proposal to really do streamlining and what we would have to do in statute to allow the streamlining to happen so that we can get this process done in a more expedited fashion. And I think, as a matter of policy, I think that's a direction we should be going, and we're not. And fully understanding the implications of this, those are the reasons I'm going to vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. The chair certainly shares some concerns with you. Representative Carl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the director and Adam for seriously listening to our concerns and for amending the bill. I appreciate your good work on that. I, too, am voting no on this bill today, and I'd like to explain why. We're going to add a couple of employees to the agency, and while I think that is noble in terms of trying to reduce the backlog issue, I don't think this is the session we should be adding any state employees at all, period, for any reason, because we simply don't have the money for it, number one. Number two is there's been an argument made that if we don't reduce the backlog, we begin to have some economic damage. I think Representative Cruz just made a very good point that if you go back and historically look at the backlog that the agency has had over many years, it has remained in the 600 number or so, and currently it's about 700 today. They've not been able to adequately deal with the backlog, and I'm not sure that that's so much related to a FTE issue as it is the process issue, streamlining. And I do appreciate the fact that the agency is willing to put together a work group to really explore those issues during the interim. And I think that's highly appropriate and necessary. And I applaud them for doing that. The bill that we did pass earlier does allow the economic impact issue to be addressed, I believe, in that the large companies that would perhaps employ larger numbers of individuals do have the ability to spend the extra dollars to expedite the process. I think that's appropriate. Start card issue clearly has to be dealt with. I think I could vote for this out of committee as a matter of principle if we were only dealing with a start card right now. Because clearly they're going to be out of money. There needs to be revision there, I think, also, and I would hope that they would look at that in addition to the water right operating fund in their work group. They're going to be a start card will be out of money. I wish that, again, we had dealt with that issue primarily. I do not believe that, based on the historic track record of the agency, and that clearly predates Director Cleary, but if you look at their own chart here, you'll realize that they don't fall below the magic number of $120,000 ending balance in their water right operating fund solely. Until you get, by my estimation, somewhere in February or March of 2005. They don't get down to the lowest level they've ever had that fund until October of 2005. What I'm saying, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, is that clearly I think they could do without the increase in regards to the water right operating fund and still have money to operate, still not go to a zero balance, and the next legislative body session could deal with the issue of raising fees potentially based on whatever ideas that would come out of their work group in terms of streamlining processes. I think if we hand them an increase today in this level, they won't have as much pressure as they would have in the interim to really diligently work hard at trying to streamline the process as part of the overall fix. I'm not saying that they won't need some fee increase in the future. But I'm saying, Mr. Chair, right now I think it's premature to do that. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I have extraordinary difficulty believing that in Washington State it costs them three times as much on the private sector to process a permit as it does for us with state employees here in Oregon. And I would frankly like to have that issue explored in fuller detail also. And I'm sure that they've gotten the message to do that. Again, I appreciate the agency's work in trying to address our concerns. I just think it's premature to move this bill forward in its current existence. And that's why I'm voting no in committee today. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to pontificate.
Thank you, Representative. Are there other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfeld.
I just want to state for the record, I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but I do agree with Representative Cruz that Western water law, it's not just Oregon's water law, but Western water law is one of the most archaic bodies of law that we have on the books. And I certainly would agree that we need to take a wholesale look at our water laws. However, I do believe that we also need to look at adequately funding these programs to make sure that these permits are processed in a timely manner. And given our fiscal crisis, I think it's important to look at our dependence on general fund money. And if we can look at ways that we can transfer some of our dependency off of general fund to permit fees, I think it's really important that we take a hard look at that. So I will be supporting the bill. I also want to just mention to Representative Krupp that $2,200 is a bargain, and having worked as a consultant, and I won't tell you what typical hourly fees are, but it's actually my understanding is that if the private sector is doing it, they're going to be charging a higher rate than probably our hourly rate of our public employees. And having worked for large engineering firms, consulting firms that have done this work, I can tell you that the hourly rates probably that number sounds pretty much in line with some of the work I've done on permits and permit applications. But so I think it's important to put in context of when you're working with private consultants versus the state agencies what the true cost recoveries are. And so I'll be interested to see those numbers as well, but look forward to working with you, hopefully, on the work group.
You were overpaid then. Other discussion? The advantage of being the chair, I guess, is that you get to be either first or last.
or both. Or and in the middle if you choose. So.
just to kind of in reflecting, on this about Western water law and Oregon water law being archaic. I am delighted with the kind of implication that all of the other statutes in the Oregon revised statute are not archaic and convoluted, especially in the area of perhaps human services.
Mr. Chair, I never said that.
Well taken, Mr. Chair.
He said more archaic.
Of course, sometimes the difficulty with Western water law and Oregon water law depends upon whether this archaic, convoluted system we have is benefiting you or harming you. And as the case may be, our opinions seem to go, I think, in that direction. But in reference to Representative Cruz and Representative Krupp's discussions, there's certainly a considerable portion there that I agree with you on. And I think there is a significant need for continued discussion on this. And that was the specific reason that I requested that there be no recommendation. I, too, would like to make the recommendation, as I will, not as a member of the committee, but as a person, to the Ways and Means people the start card fee is something that needs to be addressed and needs to be addressed now. The other fees, there are some things I like and some things I don't necessarily like about them. This is fundamentally the responsibility of the Ways and Means Department to figure out how much they should, how much they shouldn't be. And failing to have a specific recommendation, for the overall policy area, given our system that we have in this building, it strikes the chair that we need to give the Ways and Means people the tool that they need to deal with this issue. They may come out of that subcommittee and the committee as a whole with recommendations or the positions that Representative Cruz and Representative Krupp are advancing. And that would kind of be my hope that they would follow that general line of thinking. That isn't our jurisdiction to get into this issue. There are some of the fees in here that I found to be excessive. There are some of the fees that I found to be inadequate. I'm not the committee to deal with whether it should be X or Y as far as the amounts are concerned. With that, hearing or seeing no other discussion, call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
No.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye.
Representative
Dean Builder.
Aye.
Representative
Crow.
No.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. Having received the majority needed, the bill is referred to Ways and Means, and we're closing the work session on House Bill 2268. And with that, we then will open a public hearing on House Bill 2895. Mr. Test.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2895 directs Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits on programs of certain agencies that affect water quality and quantity.
Okay, what silly committee was it that advanced this bill for us to consider?
Huh?
We have a number of people signed up to testify on this. Kathy, and I'm going to mispronounce the last name again, Kathy, from the Secretary of State's Audit Department.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kathy Polino, Director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. House Bill 2895 would require our office to conduct performance and program audits of all programs that affect water quality and quantity, and those that are administered by Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Agriculture, Department of Water Resources, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the State Forestry Department. Just by way of definition, a performance audit is one that looks at whether programs are operating economically and efficiently. A program audit is one that looks to see whether programs are achieving their desired results. And so what this bill would be asking us to do is to look at all programs, again, that affect water quality and quantity, whether they're operating economically, can they do what they're doing cheaper, whether they're operating efficiently, can they do it quicker, smarter, and then whether they are achieving those desired results. And then on top of this, the bill lists 9 specific areas for us to do audit work. I won't read those to you. They're there in front of you. And so we see at a minimum at least 9 performance audits coming out of this bill, if not more than that. And just for example, taking the first topic area, we would be required to look at all agencies that impact agricultural water quality management plans. Are they operating efficiently, economically, and achieving desired results? And then so forth. Just to give you kind of a rule of thumb, too, a typical performance audit takes about 2,500 audit hours for us.
Pardon me?
And 2,500 audit hours, and at a cost of about $70 an hour. And, you know, if we are going to multiple agencies, the audit will take a lot more time than that, or if the quality of the information isn't very good, the audit may take longer. Conversely, if we have a narrowly scoped audit, specific objectives, we can do it at a much cheaper rate than that. And so looking at this and seeing, you know, at a minimum 9 performance audits, we see at least $1.5 million worth of audit work here on the table. Mr. Chair, don't get me wrong. We love to audit. We want to do audits, and we're here to serve you. In fact, we've already done some audit work in bits and pieces of these areas already. However, if there are specific questions that need to be answered or some kind of an objective that we can help narrow this down, we can do this work at a much cheaper rate than that. So, Mr. Chair, you know, we're looking for some direction. If there's specific audit areas or issues that are on the table, we'd like to work with those folks to try to identify what that is so that we can do this in a much cheaper and more economical manner. I'd like to make one final point is that there is a mechanism currently available to help receive and prioritize legislative requests for audits. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee, it's an interim committee right now. There's a bill right now to make it a standing committee. But one of the charges of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee is to accept requests for audits from members of the legislature and help prioritize those audits. We do have limited resources, and there's only so many resources out there available to do audit work. And so, you know, just wanted to throw that on the table as that is a mechanism that's available to help accept and look at audit issues, help prioritize where those are. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Other questions? Representative Kurz.
Does your division have folks who have a high level of expertise in things like 10-10 plans or CAFO or those various aspects, or would you be having to outsource?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, we do have folks that have done different kinds of environmental audits in the past.
Okay, but I'm talking specific programs and specific levels of expertise, because what you're asking what this bill is asking you to audit are some very technical subjects. And I guess my question would be, do you have in-house people that have a high level of expertise in these technical fields?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, we do have some folks that do have been studying this issue for a number of years. Depending on the scope of the audit, we may or may not have the specific expertise to do it. And so there might be bits and pieces that we need to bring other folks in, but we have folks that have been digging into water quality for a number of years and know all about TMDLs and all those other issues. So we have some of that expertise, again, depending on the scope.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I'm a little puzzled at the per hour cost. I think in much of the private sector, as far as auditing is concerned, that may exceed the private sector's auditing costs. And I'm wondering why we pay more than maybe I could go elsewhere and do it.
Mr. Chair, our costs, we do a number of contracts for audit work right now. We contract out a bunch of our financial audit work. We've also contracted performance audit work out in the past. The hourly rates we pay to those firms significantly are greater than what we pay, what the $70 an hour rate is. I don't have that with me, but I could provide a breakdown of all those costs. They range anywhere from probably, you know, and again, this is an average cost for our office. Our staff auditors are a lot cheaper than our management. But the cost of the private sector audits that we do ranges anywhere from about $70 an hour for their staff auditors up to almost $300 an hour for some of their partners.
I recognize billable hours for CPAs. Are considerably in excess of $70 an hour, but most of the audit work is not done by, and most of this wouldn't be done by senior partners in a type of audit firm. So that was all. It just struck me as maybe being a little bit over what the industry goes with on that, but I won't quarrel with to that point for you. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I hope that can get you going here.
No. It doesn't take much normally. Being the simple-minded farmer that I am.
Why are you laughing?
Hey, you're making a joke. So I'm just sitting here.
Oh, now I'm a joke. Thanks, Representative.
Keep it coming.
Yeah. This is a fair amount of audit work. What's the total projected cost, and where do we find those dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kropp, that's the way the bill is written, it's hard to tell exactly how much audit work is required to fulfill this. We were trying to get our arms around it and figure out how to do this, looking at economy, efficiency, and effectiveness of all water quality programs in the state. By just taking the 9 subject areas that are listed here, we thought that maybe 9 performance audits would be at a minimum required. There might be more. And that's where, if you take that 9 audits times our 2,500 hours at $70 an hour, gets us to about a little over $1.5 million worth of audit work.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony, Ms. Bolino.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Ted Lorenzen with the Department of Forestry. Good
morning, Ted.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. I'm Ted Lawrence, an assistant state forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I think you heard some good testimony. This bill is written very broadly, and so it is hard to really assess the consequences of the costs. But I think it's also important that you understand there are a number of processes currently in place that the state agencies conduct, particularly the Department of Forestry conducts, to get at these very issues. And I want to make you aware of the extent of those efforts. I think it's all in our interest to avoid the Department of Redundancy Department if we go forward with this concept. We look at effectiveness in terms of our water quality programs in a number of ways. We look at it in kind of two pathways. The first are the rules effective in terms of maintaining water quality. And the second we look at in the context of we're getting the levels of compliance that we are hoping for. And we have a very strong effort in both. It's fair to say that the context of looking at the effectiveness of water quality rules is a very complex process. We have a substantial monitoring program to address that issue. Some of the data we collect is at the level of research quality effort. We have hydrologists, biologists, foresters that are doing the work. We've also completed a compliance audit effort, and actually, as far as I know, this is the first statistically valid broad look at compliance of a statewide regulatory program that I'm aware of. It was part of the Oregon plan process. But looking at compliance is a process that requires involvement of the stakeholders to make sure they understand, accept, and support both the process and the results.
Ted.
Excuse me.
Do you have a cost with that audit?
We do. In terms of our monitoring program that we have in place, it's about a $500,000 program per biennium.
Okay.
And again, it shows the level of complexity it takes to monitor effectiveness and compliance as well. Both effectiveness monitoring and compliance monitoring in our effort involve the range of stakeholders in designing the methodology, in developing the reports and providing quality assurance on those, and designing the solutions where we do identify problems. Those steps are critically important when you have a regulatory program to make sure the stakeholders, interest groups are brought along in the process and methodology. And there's nothing in this bill that would ensure that that's done. More specifically, in addition to making you aware of the processes we have in place, which we think are very substantive and important, and the proposal wouldn't add to that, is the cost. Very clearly, we're at a point where additional audit costs would reduce our ability to implement our programs, and I think it's a better buy to do the forest practices regulatory work and get that done on the ground and do additional auditing that probably is redundant. Secondly,
I was going to want to ask another question, but I think you've answered it. I was going to ask if this would be redundant then for, as you see it, for the Department of Forestry. Thank you.
Chair Jensen, I agree with that. Secondly, the question about the expertise, we estimated probably a $40,000 cost per audit. That was on the assumption that we would have to provide the agency expertise to probably gather the information pertinent to the audit, because, quite frankly, our experience would indicate that it does take people that are both technically competent in the range of fields like hydrology and forestry, but also program competent in terms of what do the rules say and what do the rules require, and Secretary of State's office does not have that level of expertise. And finally, this bill is written very broadly, and as the Secretary of State indicated, they're not quite sure how many audits they would conduct and the scope of those audits, and we think that's a major flaw as well. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from committee members for Ted? Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Can I ask Matt Blevins from Oregon Environmental Council to come up, please? Wait. Is Adam going to testify?
Assessment,
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Blevins, Legislative Affairs Director with the Oregon Environmental Council. Thanks for allowing me to testify today. OEC is in support of this concept. We think that it makes sense for the Secretary of State to do a comprehensive audit of all of the water quality programs here in the state to give us a better picture of where we are and where we're going. I think here in Oregon, we all recognize that we still have a lot of challenges when it comes to water quality. 15,000 miles of streams and rivers have recently been listed on the 303D list. 700 miles of streams and rivers are contaminated to the point where you're not allowed to eat the fish out of them because of mercury contamination and other problems. We obviously have temperature challenges for a lot of streams and rivers. There's a load of different problems that we're seeing here in the state, and we are taking good steps to try to deal with these problems, and we have a lot of different agencies doing that. But it can be a little overwhelming when you try to get a comprehensive picture of what is going on out there. In terms of the agencies that we have working on this issue, that includes ODF&W, DEQ, ODA, WRD, OWEB, DSL, ODF, and ODOT. And so obviously there's a lot of different people with their fingers in the pie here. Obviously there's a lot of different programs on the ground that are trying to deal with this, and there are a number of different programs that other folks think that we may need to implement in addition to what we already have. And so I think as we continue to have the discussion about what is the best way to proceed to improve our waterways, we continue to feel that we need a good base to start from or continue the discussion. There's been a lot of new programs that have been implemented over the last 5 to 10 years, and we're now at a point where we can start to get a better assessment about are these programs doing the jobs that they were intended to do. I think that in this budgetary climate, there have been some real questions asked about are we spending the money the way we need to. We continue to see some serious financial needs out there for current programs that are on the ground, particularly those programs that rely on technical assistance like the 10-10 plan that don't have the kind of resources they need to adequately do what they've been asked to do. And so if we are really going to try to move forward and continue to improve water quality here in the state, it seems to us that we need to have a better sense of what are the priorities, what is getting us the bang for the buck that we're currently pursuing, and are there better or different or more efficient ways of doing this. Obviously, as some of the previous testimony alluded to, there are current audits that already happen, but to our knowledge, there isn't a comprehensive audit that's been done to really look at all of the programs, not just at an agency-by-agency level. And so our thinking is that it would be much more useful for the committee and members of the legislature to have a comprehensive view of what's working and what's not, and in particularly in sort of a cost relation sense as we move forward and figure out new and better ways to continue to improve water quality here in Oregon. So in closing, we would encourage the committee to consider this. Obviously, the costs for this type of audit are somewhat daunting given the budget situation right now, but we look at this as an investment because as we look at how to put forward budgets for these natural resource agencies that are doing this work, we're going to be having to make these hard decisions, both this biennium and then in bienniums in the future, about what makes the most sense in terms of how we're spending our money. We think this could be a real tool for the committee and for other members of the legislature to help make the most intelligent and most educated decisions regarding those issues. Thanks, and I'll take any questions.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, Matt, do you have programs? Can you give us an example of a program that you think today, with today's dollars, is not being properly implemented that you think an audit would shed some light on?
Well, again, I think you know, the example of the 10-10 plan is a good one where there is some clear indications that there is a much higher need for technical support and funds for the technical support on the ground to adequately implement that program statewide. And I think that this would help to indicate where and how effective those programs are given the different levels of staffing we're seeing in different basins across the state.
Well, Mr. Chair, that isn't quite what I understand your point there, Matt, but that's kind of a different question than what I'm asking. I'm asking, given the current dollars they have, do you believe they're not currently implementing the plan properly with what resources they have today?
I think there's some real question to whether or not they are. I don't have good information on whether or not they are, but there's some real questions there. I think you can look at another example of that is the enforcement program for the water permit program. which we know currently isn't implementing their program the way they were supposed to. We have a huge backlog of permits. We don't have adequate enforcement. So there's some examples like that, too, that are out there where the job isn't being done that was being asked to be done.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much, Frank.
Thank you.
And we have Adam Sutton and Paul Cleary.
I think Adam's writing solo on this one.
Is he going to write? Well, Paul,
but he's being audited, Mr. Chair.
Constantly auditing the performance. Audit, yeah. And on television, too. Good morning again, Adam Sussman for the record, Water Resource Department. I'll be very brief. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2895, a measure that would direct the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits on department programs that affect water quality and water quantity. I think you've heard, as we've been in this front of this committee a number of times, that the Water Resources Department continually seeks stakeholder input on ways to streamline our processes and to improve our customer service and accountability. And the department supports the idea of evaluating its performance and programs. However, the audit proposed in this bill could result in a fiscal impact, which we've calculated, depending on how the bill is interpreted, to be anywhere from as little as $3,000 to as great as $140,000. That, to our knowledge, is not included in the governor's balanced budget. Therefore, if the funding for the proposed audit is not included in the governor's balanced budget, the department cannot support House Bill 2895. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Adam?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Cook.
Adam and to the other agency folks in the room here, I understand we have budgetary issues to deal with, and that's clearly a huge hurdle for us to get over in this session. I think it's really important that we have accountability measures in place to ensure that, first of all, our legislative intent is being followed and that the dollars are being spent wisely. And I, as a legislator, frankly, get a little embarrassed when stories come out about agencies, one particular agency where we're cutting funds to elderly folks, threatening to throw them on the street, and they're out buying new furniture. Those kinds of things create real grief for us legislators because, number one, we don't know they're happening. And secondary, the public just hammers us over those, as they should. I really think it's important that we do have auditing procedures and performance auditing. I think that's extraordinarily important. And I don't know how to reconcile this. And I know agencies don't like having people looking over their shoulders sometimes. And because we've had some unfortunate stories come forward, I think it's highly appropriate that we do. I'm not sure this is how we get there necessarily through the Secretary of State's office for numerous reasons, in my opinion. But I really think we ought to do this. So if we can't, I mean, this is going to be a financial burden to your agency, depending on how big it becomes. How do we help us understand how your accountability measures and Department of Forestry's and Department of Agriculture's and everyone else's that really is being impacted here, how we can trust your accountability measures to provide us with the information that we need. And I don't mean to be that offensive, and I'm not implying anything here. I want everyone in this room to understand that. But again, I go back to some of the most unfortunate stories that have come forward during this legislative session that create an impression to some of us legislators that sometimes business as usual is just continuing in the bureaucracy and the accountability isn't there. How do we trust, the old Reagan adage when dealing with the Russians is trust but verify. How do we verify that the numbers and the processes you're putting in place are really accomplishing what you and us want them to do?
Easy question to answer.
Is that a question?
Well, I tried to make it there at the last. Yeah.
Well, Chair Jensen, Representative Krebs, of course, I can't answer for the other agencies in terms of what they're doing in terms of accountability measures, and I'm sure they're doing a lot of things. But, you know, as the Water Resources Department, anyway, as we entered into, you know, lots of discussions about streamlining accountability, what we found is that these are things that we've been doing for years, and I think the way that we handle it is having constant and frequent interaction with our stakeholders, the people that are paying us the money to process their applications, the well drilling community whose start card fees are used to inspect wells, interactions with our commission that's looking at the accountability of the department. These are all the kinds of activities that we're engaged in. And so to the extent that we need to keep thinking and talking both with those stakeholders and the legislature to find ways to gain trust, you know, we're open to do that. We're not opposed to this idea or opposed to the concept of someone, you know, looking over our shoulder. I think in this case, we're just concerned about the fiscal impact. But I think there are ways that agencies can continue to interact with the public to gain trust and accountability.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good answer, yeah. By the way.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Schaffer.
Now it's my turn to sound like a simple country boy laborer. You know, we need to hire
a few more. I have to interrupt this. President of the United States a few years ago said, when somebody tells you they're just a simple country boy, get a hold of your wallet.
Oh, Mr. Chair, that hurts.
You got it both.
Four. I just voted against a fee increase in this country.
But in Representative Schaffler's case, it might be true.
My secret's out. Anyway, I think we need, what I was going to say is, I think we just need to hire a few more laborers and a few less bean counters, because auditing the auditors is absurd. I'm sorry. We got auditors and CPAs and lawyers running all over this town. You know what? I don't, as a taxpayer, really feel like I'm getting my money's worth out of them. If I see some men and women out fixing a bridge or restoring some habitat, now I can go and touch what I paid for. But auditing the auditors, why not just audit the auditors that audit the auditors on top of it? Where does it end? Thank you.
Point well taken. If we could reduce the number of auditors and the number of attorneys by three-fourths or something of that nature, it might... I noticed somebody looked up at me. it might be an easier world for us here. Thank you, Adam.
Thank
There's
you.
No other question.
Well, Mr. Chair, and not for Adam. And I like that boy. I really do. And, Mr. Chair, I could go into pontification, too, I guess. But I will keep this very brief and not get to a lot of things I want to say. Simply, by, I think this is a solution in search of a problem, and I'm hoping the committee is not intending on moving this legislation. And if it's not, then I have said enough.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any other comments that are for the good of the order? I think that's all that... are signed up. However, after the chair's last comments, there may be others who wish to come up for rebuttal. You're certainly welcome, Gene. I mean,
now, if you're a lawyer, please, you'd be best advised to stay seated, because it'd be open season.
With that, we will close the public hearing. Oh, but we will not close the public hearing on that. We have two written testimonies to be entered in the record on this. We have written testimony from DEQ, and we have written testimony from OWEB. Mm-hmm. And we would like for the record to show that that testimony has been entered and for the members to have an opportunity to review that. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2895 and move to the point.
Can we discuss these bills as you're going through them, Mr. Chair?
We can as we go through it, if you can get your discussion in before the hammer comes down.
on the first. That would be a first.
That would be a major accomplishment. I think we have a vice chair and freshman left that still make us a quorum, so we will proceed with opening a public hearing on 3006. We'll close the public hearing on 3006. Open the public hearing on 2293. Close the public hearing on 2293. We'll open a public hearing on 2360. Close the public hearing on 2360. Open a public hearing on 2364. Close the public hearing on 2364. Open the public hearing on 2457. Close the public hearing on 2457. Open a public hearing on 2606. Close the public hearing on 2606. Open a public hearing on 2659. Close the public hearing on 2659. Open a public hearing on 2688. Close the public hearing on 2688. Open a public hearing on 2887. Close the public hearing on 2887. Open a public hearing on 2977. Close the public hearing on 2977. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2991. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2991. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3047. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3047. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3094. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3094. Open a public hearing on 3201. House Bill 3201. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3201. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3202. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3202. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3204. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3204. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3205. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3205. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3215. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3215. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3216. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3216. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3217. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3217. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3220. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3220. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3297. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3297. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3249. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3249. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3261. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3261. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3281. Close public hearing on House Bill 3281. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3295. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3295. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3298. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3298. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3309. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3309.
2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes.
Yeah, we're efficient.
That's not.
You give OB a run for his money, Mr. Chair.
With that, the orders of the day have been completed. We will then, if there's nothing else, for the good of the committee, adjourn the Water Committee on this day.